Welcome to Talk Wealth to Me, a safe space podcast where we chat about anything and everything related to personal finance.
The information contained in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It does not constitute as accounting, legal, tax, or other professional advice.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Talk Wealth to Me. Today's guest is an engineer from the Silicon Valley and a father of five. And during his journey of parenthood, he learned that teaching personal finance to his children was not the easiest thing in the world. And I think most of us parents find that. So he did something about it. And he created a product over many years called FamZoo. And it's basically, it's preparing kids for a financial jungle, which we all know it surely is. So stay with us. This is a great episode. There you go. Well, give us a little bit of an idea of how this idea started and what made it come to fruition.
Yeah, so it started for me. So my wife and I have raised five children. And when the oldest two were in middle school, we started to realize, they're not learning anything about personal finance. And so we were kind of casting about for some tools to help them, learn that money is a finite resource, not terribly well understood in Palo Alto and other wealthy communities sometimes, that money is something that's finite. You need to learn how to manage and be responsible with. And so at the time, there weren't really any products that were helpful in that endeavor, in the sense that they weren't designed for kids. They weren't really designed with education in mind. They're really adult products. And so I started out by just running a bank and a spreadsheet. So getting them used to the idea that this is an account, this is how much you have to spend, and you can't spend more than what's in your account, and here's how you check your balance, and basic things like that. So it really just started out as a spreadsheet that was the bank of dad. And over time, I've been in software since 1982, 84, roughly. And so I had the ability to kind of create a little website because I got a little tired of, kids rushing into my office and saying, "Dad, how much is in my account?" Right. I love the kids dearly and all, but really. I made a little website where they could sign in and see their balance. And then we started to add things to it like, okay, what about compound interest? Let's encourage the kids to save. Now, this is Bank of Dad compound interest. Like, no, you can't bank at my bank. We pay some pretty outstanding compound interest and we deliver it every week because kids operate on a faster clock and a penny at the end of the year is not going to be terribly motivating for anyone, let alone a kid.
Not motivating for
me.
But
if a kid sees that, hey, at the end of the week, I earned 20 cents and then next week, 22 cents and 25, repetition is wonderful and operating on a faster time scale is wonderful as well. So I paid them an outrageous interest rate just to kind of send the message that that a lot of people don't understand at all is that money can actually work for you if you keep your paws off of it. And so basically the general idea behind what we were doing was create a bank where the parents are the bankers and they control the terms and they can kind of build whatever system or set of incentives and constraints that they think are important to match their particular family's values and the types of habits that they're trying to encourage. And, so it's a safe place to make lots of mistakes and make them at a time when those mistakes don't have huge negative implications. It's really all about learning. And that's just a whole different ballgame than, and I'm not trying to be pejorative, but different ballgame from an adult product where it's like, okay, you're really going to get severely penalized if you make mistakes. And the point here is to experience those mistakes and learn from them.
I want to ask you mentioned that it was important to you to make sure that that compound interest that your kids were earning was substantial enough that they're recognizing it. As an adult, sometimes you look at your savings account and you're right. When it's only like a couple pennies, it's like, not very motivational to keep going at that savings rate.
Right.
Maybe you thought you were making a difference.
Right.
What was your inspiration for doing that and making sure that if the bank wasn't going to give your kids the interest rate that was going to spark that joy of saving, what was your inspiration? Like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to become their banker. And this is what we're going to do to get them to like saving.
You know, that's a really good question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that question after 13 years of this. I'm not sure. You know, there is a book called The First National Bank of Dad, which, by the way, is great for moms too.
Okay.
A poorly named book in this day and age, where I didn't read it until after I had built the system. But it's a fabulous book, and I highly recommend it because the author is David Owen. And I have my bookshelf.
I can see that.
And he lays out sort of this notion of running your own little family bank. And at the time, he ran it in Quicken. This is back in the day before the internet and so forth. And there was a personal finance piece of software called Quicken. Mm-hmm. Now people think of Mint, maybe.
Yeah, Intuit owns it now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so.
Who are partners of ours, by the way. So shout out to Intuit.
There we go. Shout out. And so I suspect it was just me casting about for ways to think about how to motivate my kids to save, knowing that whatever dad says is ridiculous and not listened to. So maybe there's a phrase, BS walks and money talks. So I think I was just thinking about, as I was doing this, like, you know, how can we operate in time frames and amounts that are meaningful to kids? And so we've done that with a number of things. We do loans as well. So each of my kids got loans for their laptops. And to pay back the loans, their wages were garnished. So their allowances were split between spending, saving, giving, and paying off that loan. Because, you know, a lot of parents say, gosh, don't give your kids loans, right? And I understand why they say that, because they don't want the kid to feel like they can just purchase more than they can. But I actually wanted my kids to experience a loan so that they knew that the money's not free, that it takes away from the money you could have spent on other stuff. And in some cases, it has pretty hefty interest rates. Now, I happened to be, I'm such a baby that I gave them zero interest loans, but that's just me. I'm sure more parents out there have more backbone than I had, but you could choose whether to charge them an interest rate or not. For me, I just wanted them to see like, oh, okay, like 20% of my allowance suddenly disappeared. And now it's paying back for this thing that I got in the present, but I'm paying for in the future. So I wanted them to experience that as kids in a very simple way, so that they weren't surprised by that concept when they got out in the real world.
Well, you mentioned the multiple categories too, one of which is giving.
Mm-hmm.
How important was it for you when your kids are paying back the loan, for example, on the laptop? How important was it that they didn't just take all of that allowance and all of it goes toward the debt and they're not adding anything to saving or not?
Yeah. Yeah, so they didn't get to choose. That's one answer. Now, I say that with, I'm kind of kidding around. I think what's really interesting, actually, is to let your kids be involved and engaged in the decision about what percentages go to which bucket. Now, in the case of a loan, the deal was up front. If you get a loan, it's coming out of your spending bucket. So that was kind of the deal up front. However, let's go back to the, you know, when you're just setting up the buckets, and a lot of parents will say, well, you know, what should be the split? Should it be 80-10-10, you know, 50-40, whatever? And I kind of feel that's a really great time to ask your kid, say, you know, kind of pose the question, okay, we're going to split between these buckets and none of them can be zero. What do you think the amount should be? And I think that kids and especially teens, they crave ownership and agency. And so, you know, as a general rule of thumb, giving your kids some agency over the decisions, I think is a really powerful and positive thing. It really makes them own it. I mean, it reminds me of when my daughter, you know, she wanted to get a Neiman Marcus chiffon gown for her junior prom. And
wow.
She had a clothing budget that was an annual clothing budget. And this thing was going to gas that whole thing. And so I could have said no, but I said, you know, it's your call. Like, if you buy that, you have nothing left, right? And so I gave her my expert fatherly advice, which was summarily dismissed, and she bought the gown. But the neat thing was, I wasn't the bad guy. Like, she just had to deal with the fact that she had torched her clothing budget for the remainder of the year. And it wasn't a confrontational thing, because she made the choice and then she dealt with the consequences. And it's hard to scream at a set of numbers, right? It's easy to scream at debt. And so that was a really valuable kind of lesson to have before going to college. And then when she got to college, she was like, God, none of these kids know what a budget is. She was like shocked. And that's kind of a sad commentary. I mean, I think we should, you know, as long as the kid's not, you know, purchasing beer and cigarettes, I think we should largely let them make mistakes with their budget. And in fact, I think allowance is a very charged term. Like, my recommendation is call it a budget. It could be a budget for anything. It could be a budget for your wanton entertainment, you know, but it's a budget and it's a constraint. And I think the key thing, you know, that I would encourage people who have a very visceral negative reaction to allowance, just relabel it, call it a budget. In fact, name it a budget in whatever system you use. Like, by the way, you don't have to use our product. You could use a spreadsheet. We have a free spreadsheet on my blog that you can use, but call the entries like budget allocation, you know, to really drive home the point that it's not a freebie. Is something, it's a constraint you're living with. It.
How old were your kids when you decided that you were going to look into putting something like this together? Or did you just get so far that eventually you're like, dude, I'm there. I'm just going to go that much further. How old were they when you were like, we need a better way of keeping track of this?
Well, the oldest kids were in middle school.
Okay.
The youngest kid was just a thought, not even a thought yet. So our youngest just graduated from high school. And so this was quite some time ago. And the interesting thing is that the youngest grew up his entire life on the system. And so that was nice. And like I said, the older kids were in middle school, which, and initially we did not have prepaid cards with the product. So I think the product really became infinitely better when we introduced prepaid cards, which was over 6 years ago, maybe seven, because I know we're on the second renewal cycle for some of our first families. And it's a 3 year renewal on the card. Cards are issued for 3 years. And so the neat thing about the cards is that's even more agency for the kid, right? Because they go out and they make the purchase. With the original product, it was just sort of like a ledgering system where the parent would make the purchase on the child's behalf and then go back and debit the account, you know, subtract from the account. And so with the card, it's all neat because the kids are really feel grown up. They've got a card with their name on it and it's got a purpose and so forth, and they can spend. And obviously online spending is a big thing these days. They can use it in store, so forth. And so that's just a real sense of ownership. And then for the parent, it's, you know, there's a reason the company's called FamZoo. It's short for My Family is a Zoo. So they don't have a lot of time to be like manually entering things into a ledger, right? So the neat thing about a card is it automates all of that. And furthermore, a really neat capability is getting text messages that go both to the parent and the child when the card is used, because that prompts a lot of great discussions. Not the least of which is, hey, I don't recognize this transaction. There is fraud out there, and it's a sad reality, and it's only escalating. And so educating the kids about keeping their eye on transactions is a great personal finance habit and something very important to learn early, and then how to take care of card numbers, PINs. But there can be fraud, through no fault of theirs. And then there's the fact that bad actors out there, online companies, trick people into signing up for things, really. I mean, frankly. And those alerts help suss that out and have that conversation. So some people say, gosh, you know, why would I want to automate all the finances for the kids? I want to have conversations with them. Well, the interesting thing is sometimes you end up having more conversations because you've introduced automation and you're kind of having these sort of real-time discussions, and you're forcing these conversations earlier than you might have had, or might have even not even been aware of that was going on. So
it's funny that you mentioned fraud. My 6-year-old has now to the point where he messes with the iPad and he's on there, and he accidentally rented a movie on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And it was like $3, whatever the rental fee was. And I saw it come through and I asked my wife, did you rent this? I didn't recognize it. So then I went to him and he's like, oh, I'm sorry you found out. How'd you find out so fast? I was like, you have to keep an eye on things. And I noticed, and he's like, I'm so sorry, I did it on accident. And but he was just amazed that I, one, found out. I don't know how he thought he was going to get away with it.
I think that's a really good point, which is we have to remind parents to have grace in these situations, right? Like kids, for sure. You know, this is all new for them, right? And it's very easy for them to get tricked into signing up for stuff. I mean, signing up for Amazon Prime happens all the time. And it's just like, it's okay. You know, you kind of want to create this world where the child feels comfortable saying, yeah, dad or mom, I did sign up for that. I feel badly. And you're like, that's okay. Here's what we do about it. And here's how we make sure we avoid that problem in the future, rather than doggone it, you know, right? You know, I have a whole blog post on the unauthorized purchase scenario, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, usually when you kind of, because most kids, like my kids, would not come forward as quickly as yours did.
Came forward because he got caught.
So one thing that you want to do is kind of say, oh, by the way, I'm going to be contacting the company and they'll be able to tell me exactly like who made the purchase and so forth. And suddenly memories are jogged immediately when you put on the dad or mom detective hat and then just be, you know, sort of graceful about it, especially if it's a first time offense,
right,
as it were. And anyway, I think those are really valuable conversations to have. And ideally, you know, so some people say, gosh, isn't that helicopter parenting if you're turning on alerts and things like that and, you know, spying on your kid? Well, first of all, tell your kid that alerts are on. Right. So that'll head off a lot of the bass just to begin with. It's just like, hey, every time you're going to use this card, here's your card. They're like, awesome. Every time you use it, we're both going to get a text message. Wink, wink. You know, that way you kind of know in real time. You can't get into too much difficulty. But my point was that I don't think that's helicopter parenting. I think that that's modeling for kids. Hey, we're transparent about finances in our family. And you should feel comfortable talking to me about problems or issues as they arise. And my hope is if they get that comfort level with their parents and their family, they will have that comfort level with their spouses or partners as young adults. And I think that's, personally, I think that's healthy. Obviously, alerts are optional. You can decide, but that's kind of how I view it.
That's really interesting you say that. I would say that that's just parenting. Helicopter parenting is making decisions for your children or rescuing them from making bad decisions.
Right.
When you're in reality, you're giving them the opportunity to be more adult than anything. Just like if we go to a bank and we're going to get an email that we spent. My wife, for instance, is going to get an email that I went and spent money somewhere. So right. I guess she's helicopter.
Well, Chase,
parenting.
I think your wife should keep a very sharp eye on you.
Yeah.
But you know, one thing that I have certainly learned, and one thing that I think is really a hallmark of our system is we have lots of knobs and dials because families are very different and they have different contexts. And to some, what I think is just good parenting, to others is something that, you know, strikes a different chord because of their experience. And so what I think is really important if you're a provider in this area is to allow families to kind of tune the system so that it can match their values. And, you know, another area, you know, it's funny because when I first started this company, you know, some people would tell me, oh, so you built a product for rich kids, right? Because they suddenly made this assumption, oh, allowance, automated allowance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was kind of worried that that's maybe that's what it was going to be. But the reality is that personal finance is applicable to every socioeconomic level and everyone in the country. And as long as we make it flexible enough where people can, A, get money onto the cards if they don't have bank accounts, so make it very accessible. There are some products that require you to have a bank account to load. That's not the case. You can load our cards with cash, for example, if you don't have a bank account. And for some people, they run their family on FAMZU cards. Now, we do have very relatively low limits. Like, ultimately, you want to get to a checking account that doesn't have a limit. Like, our cards have a $5,000 maximum balance, and they have a maximum of 2,500 transfer per day, which is more than adequate for most kids, of course. But some families run their entire budgeting system. They basically have an electronic envelope system with the different cards. So they'll have a clothing card and a food and groceries card and so forth. And that's fine as long as they can abide by those limits. But the neat thing is you can load from direct deposit, you can load from cash, you can load from your digital wallet and your bank account. And it's really been a satisfying project for me because I handle most of the customer support, and we're well over 10,000 families now, so it's a little busy. But the neat thing is during my day, I talk to people from everywhere. And I tell you, the Palo Alto bubble gets pretty annoying. So it's really nice to be able to spend my days outside the Palo Alto bubble and be able to really engage with families all across the U.S. in every kind of different situation.
So at what age, when you went from this system, what age did your children go get their own bank accounts and set up their own?
The older ones were using my system before we had cards. So I got them checking accounts and credit cards actually when they went off to college. The next three all used the cards all the way through college, and they got checking accounts and their own credit cards when they got their first steady job, or in one case we have one in the service, so it's a government job. But what we did, the cards I found were really nice in college because we have these features. I had to, I got distracted for a moment. Okay. A customer was calling, so I put them on hold. We have these features for making money requests where the child can make a money request and the parent gets a text message and they can either approve, partially approve, or deny, which is a common outcome, and they can make reimbursement requests. So we put all these little workflows in the feature, in the product that really speak to how families interact over money. And that's something I think we'll see come to more typical products and adult products, to kind of acknowledge that, in most families, there's a lot of money kind of moving around, right? Even yeah. with adult kids. And I think products are going to evolve to kind of embrace that. So in any event, we added a set of features that were really nice for, dealing with college expenses. So I would give the kids a little stipend in college, and I could automate that, for additional spending, because, eating dorm food gets old pretty quick. Sure. That kind of stuff. Yeah.
But in that case, you could then, let's say, if you wanted to, and you wanted to really teach them basically adult finance, is you could give them, if they were going to, let's say, pay for their own their tuition, you could put the money in their bank and they could physically go, either physically or electronically, pay their own tuition if you wanted to get them the responsibility of timing and paying bills,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, and Chase, that's a another favorite trick I have, or whatever, which is I like to have the kids, even if I'm going to be paying for some things, I like to have them pay for it and then request a reimbursement. And the reason it's neat is on two levels. One is sort of awareness of what stuff costs, right? Because they're physically paying for it, either online or in person, and they're just sort of seeing those prices. Oh, wow, that Axe deodorant, that is expensive.
Oh, that USD tuition.
Well, that's a whole another ballgame. And so just as that everyday items cost money. The other is, it's a reimbursement. So they have to have funds in their account. So they're basically thinking, oh, I need to maintain like a minimum balance, basically, even though we don't have any minimum balance requirements. They're just, they're being forced to not live at zero all the time. And so that's an important muscle to develop as well. By the way, all of the cards have their own routing and account numbers. So as the kids got summer jobs when they were teenagers and so forth, they could have those paychecks directly deposited to the card. And that's a neat thing as well.
You just took away my next question. So.
Yeah. Now what? Okay, let's talk about what the cards don't get you. So prepaid cards are a wonderful instrument as long as you check out all the fees and everything. Like our cards don't have any fees for declines. So the punishment for a decline is the embarrassment. That's it, right? And so that's a neat feature. Now you can't build a credit score. So you're not going to get any sort of credit worthiness or credit history out of our prepaid cards, and that's important to understand. So some parents ask, Bill, what do you recommend in that case? And what I like is a hybrid model, where you put some fixed spending on a credit card. That's predictable, maybe your Netflix bill or whatever, something that's simple to pay off. And you pay that off, regularly, you're never surprised. And then you put all your discretionary spending on a prepaid card. And that way, you have a natural constraint on spending. So I really like that sort of hybrid model.
You just
I definitely want to be clear, you can't build a credit history with
a debit card either. So I mean, that's a common misconception that we run into in our presentations, in our workshops all the time.
We suggest all the time, like, why don't you put your Netflix on there? How much it's going to cost you. It's not going to be a huge expense.
Exactly.
Give you that payment history.
Or your cell phone bill, something that you're going to pay every single month, one way or the other. Kill two birds with one stone.
Absolutely. I personally use credit cards and as long as you've got that muscle to pay them off every month in full, they can be a wonderful tool.
You just use the word. That's it.
And so I think that it's neat to introduce your kids to that, and you can avoid all that risk by really sequestering the discretionary spending onto an instrument where you can't go over, and then taking some recurring, well-known bill or bills and putting it on the credit side. That's a good balance. Now, of course, your mileage may vary with the child and their experiences. So, use your discretion, but that's a neat way to approach the problem.
Did you by chance make your children authorized users on using your wife's maybe one or two credit cards?
We did not do that. I was a co-signer on their cards. There are pros and cons to all those things, and I don't profess to be an expert at it. I'm just saying what I did in this case. Now, for the three subsequent children, they had paying jobs by the time they opened up their, they had regular full-time jobs by the time they signed up for their credit cards and stuff. So I did not need to be a co-signer in that case.
And that's an interesting thing. I mean, and again, it's personal preference to parents. Mm-hmm. We get those questions all the time. My kids seem to be starting late and getting their credit, and how do you build that up? And you can do that is simply, you can start that process by getting them a little footprint by just making them, that doesn't mean you have to give them the card. You're just putting their name as an authorized user. That doesn't mean they get to go spend freely. You can do that. Even if you didn't have a job, the idea of learning to have a credit card in your name, even if it's a student card at an early age, it gives you those that ability to learn how this product is used. And it can be a huge financial tool by the time they graduate. And they're going to their first jobs, that they're going to be far ahead of most kids.
Yeah. And they find out as soon as they want to get that first apartment that, what a credit check's all about. Right.
Right.
So that's really when they get that first wake up call. They're like, what?
Right.
Anyway, I can't just move in.
Hey, did you find some of your kids were much more apt to use it on a regular basis than others? I mean, did you see clear financial personalities early on and often?
Oh yeah. Our kids, I believe that my wife and I raised them all, but they all seem radically different. We have an incredibly diverse set of five children, and I don't think they'd be offended that I say that. We definitely did not raise robots. despite my interest in science and robotics.
It's just interesting that you brought them up pretty much all the same way, given them the same tools, and yet their personalities still come out.
Oh, yeah.
Because my kids...
They all found different ways to reject what I told them.
Right.
They're very clever.
But actually,
my kids have taught me more than I have taught them. So I'm an infinitely more empathetic person after being a father and now a grandfather. So I am really enjoying the grandfather stage because... there's no downside. It's all upside.
I want to ask you about the personality side. We talk on the show and in our blog too about the different needs and wants that people have and just your preferences for life. How do you talk about that with your kids, especially as they start to notice, like, you know, like, why does Jack live in an apartment and we live in a house? Or why does Sophie do this, you know?
Yeah, that comes up a lot in Palo Alto in particular. Why is Jack going to a birthday party on a private island in a helicopter?
Right.
And why do you have a Honda Civic, Dad? Well, my answer is because I don't care about cars. And the point is people value different things. And who am I to tell them what is valuable and meaningful to them? But the key thing is that I'm buying something because it has meaning to me or brings joy to me or my family, and that I'm concentrating, you know, my purchases on what makes sense for me, as opposed to what makes sense for Jack and his helicopter and his private island. Yeah. And so, you know, that tends to be how I approach that. I'm comfortable spending a majority of my resources on some things, and then I don't spend diddly on others. You might notice my clothing. I'm not exactly a clothes hound, for example. So, free t-shirts from software companies are pretty much what I spend my days in.
I think that's a lot of people in Palo Alto.
Yeah. Well, you'd be surprised. I don't happen to like cars. So I don't spend much on them. To me, a car is very utilitarian, but one of my sons is totally into cars, you know, and that's great. And they may choose that they want to put their extra dollars towards some really cool car technology because that's something that really interests them. And I think that's okay, even though I could give a hoot. And I'm sure some of the things I spend on there are like, oh, Dad, facepalm. You know, that's how I just want them to be making purchases in a mindful way that makes sense for them and not being swayed by how others are deciding how to make purchases. And also to realize that you really know nothing about the economic situation. I mean, I'm saying it a little strong, but that person that's taking that helicopter, they might be in debt up to their eyeballs, and you don't necessarily know that makes sense for them, right? And so that's another thing is like, hey, you've got to attenuate things to your personal financial situation. And remember, we've got this emergency fund bucket, you know, my emergency card that you need to fund first. That was one thing that I kind of introduced when the kids became teenagers one essential bucket here is your emergency card. And that's going to come into play when you get that first ticket for parking ticket. When you roll into that, none of these things actually happened. But when you roll into that that Jaguar that you didn't see behind you in the Starbucks parking lot and the guy jumps out and goes crazy town because you dented his gold plated thing. Oh man, that would be riled up. Dude, take it easy. It's like a 16-year-old daughter, you know. Did I say daughter? I do only have one daughter, so I can't hide that one. There's going to be like little emergencies that you didn't account for. So having that bucket set up and so forth, those are the kinds of things that we discuss when it comes to spending and how to allocate your funds.
So you gradually add in more buckets like the emergency savings as your kids progress through this program and learn more?
Yeah. And this kind of happened gradually over time as, you know, so, so I think I'll probably be a much better grandfather than a father now that I've learned. But, you know, these are things that I try to share with our community. So, so maybe they can put those in place for, you know, all their kids or upfront or whatever. I think an emergency bucket is a brilliant thing to put in place from the get-go. Even little kids have emergencies. I mean, you know, my boys all played hockey. So there were a couple of pucks that went through the garage door windows a couple of times. And that's a great time to basically say, well, that's what your emergency fund is for. You know, it, I don't think that's overly harsh or whatever. I think it really kind of makes it tangible. Oh, okay. I need this unanticipated bucket for stuff.
That and it teaches to, responsibility. Yeah. I mean, these are real world decisions that you're going to have to make, right? Is it worth slapping that puck in the backyard next to the window that
totally worth it.
Right. Well, again,
totally worth it. That's what my emergency fund's for.
But that, I mean, that's, I think, the real benefit that you get out of not just using money, but learning that money constantly, like anything else in this world, is making educated decisions. And yep. And whether those decisions work out for you, maybe, you know, not all the time, but you made the best educated decision you can make at the time. You went for it and you learned from it one way or the other. And I think that
so
what you've taught your kids at an early age is going to go far beyond their ability to use money. It's they're going to make much more educated and thought out decisions for everything they do.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of it's just exposing them to these ideas so it feels natural. So, for example, you know, my hope is always during that first HR meeting where they're like, okay, do you want to take part of your paycheck out to go into, you know, your 401k? They're like, well, of course I do. I've been splitting my you know, allowance since I was five. Like, who doesn't do that? That's the reaction I want them to have, which is like, really? Like, who? Like, someone doesn't do that? You know, you can really set the table with these simple habits and plant the seed that, oh, okay, that's, you know, that's a natural thing to do. And so that's really the goal of any of these systems that parents set up. And again, I want to emphasize, you don't have to have some fancy pants product to do it. I mean, you could do this with paper and pencil.
Just not as easy.
More laborious.
I have to ask you too, how important was it for you to make a digital product? Because it seems like a lot of people in personal finance will say, especially if you're trying to learn how to manage your finances, it's important to use cash. So that you can see once that money's gone, it's gone. And you can really kind of see where you've allotted that money to go. But like you said, we live in an online world and kids are accidentally buying Prime stuff on Prime all the time.
Right. So
was that a conscious choice to help parents teach kids how to manage their money in a digital world?
Yeah, Katie, I'm glad you bring that up because I think that I personally think we're headed to an increasingly digital world, cashless society. And I want my kids to feel comfortable with, you know, a digital world and understand that it's not magic. Mm-hmm. And so I have kind of two thoughts around that. One is I'm skating to where the puck's going to be. I want my kids to be skilled in handling, you know, digital forms of payment, because that's the world they're going to be living in. The other is that I fundamentally feel that kids are often smarter than parents. So parents think, they won't get it. You know, they won't get this card thing. I'm like, what are you talking about? They're the same kid who's like reconfiguring your iPad. They're going to totally get it. You know, stop it. They get things really fast. What they need is explanation and experience. And you will find that they will get it in like 3 days. Is that too long to wait for you, Mr. Parent? Right. 3 days, come on. And furthermore, even if they don't have this digital product, they're going to see you using a card. And what I encourage you to do, even if you do go the cash, because there's nothing wrong with going the cash route, but I think it runs its course pretty darn quickly. And it makes it hard to implement things like interest and so forth, which really end up getting clumsy with cash. You know, even so, and regardless of whether you're using cash or a debit card with your child, explain what happens when you run your credit card. You know, just talk through like, hey, what do you think? You know, I just ran the card. Do you think I just paid for that? Or when do I pay for that? And all that. And just, they understand if you take the time to explain. And after, you know, several times, and they start, when they start saying, "Dad, I don't want to hear how credit works again," you know, then you're fine. But if they're still looking at you with a blank look, keep telling the stupid story.
100%.
That's good advice.
So where is the best place if people want to give this a shot? FAMZOO.com, is that the best place, or find you on Facebook?
Yeah. The nice thing is if you Google FAMZOO, you're just going to find me.
Yeah.
Because nobody has that ridiculous of a name.
It was the easiest thing I think I've ever looked up on a URL.
Just remember, my family is a zoo.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a blast. I love talking children and finance. That's what we do here. So anything,
thank you all for having me. I really appreciate it.
If these generation of kids can grow up economically and financially savvy, we're going to be a much better country and world, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. If I may mention one parting tip that has nothing to do with my product, I really encourage kids of teenagers to look into Roth IRAs and to consider starting what Dan Kadlec, a personal finance writer from way, way back when I read many, many years ago, calls a family 401k. And basically, what I did for each of my teens is as soon as they got a W-2 paying job, I like to play it safe, I opened up Roth IRAs with them. And, you know, I offered them a match, you know, up to their limit. And so I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an accountant. I encourage you to research it. And I think it's one of the smartest things you can do, because it's just a trifecta of things. They have to work to qualify. Work's a good thing. Nothing better than working for someone who doesn't give a darn about you. It's a good education. And it's a tax advantaged account, and you get an excuse to talk about investing every year with your kid, because you know, you're going to do that. Hopefully you're going to do this on an annual basis until they're off fully on their own. And you got to deploy the funds somewhere. And I encourage you to look at low cost index funds as the way to deploy that. So it's really a trifecta of, you know, working, taking advantage of a tax advantage account, thinking long term, you know, basically letting them know, hey, you're not going to be getting at this until you're an old person like me. I don't tell them about the ability to withdraw funds for certain under certain circumstances,
and no reason to go
you
there
know,
yet.
An opportunity to talk about you know, low cost investing, and so that's my parting tip.
I think it's fantastic, absolutely, and not only that, but the kids need to learn that that vehicle is never going away. So they're starting at a very early age. They're going to really start understanding.
I
certainly
hope not.
Well,
and,
right,
and kids, you know, it's important because we're increasingly responsible for our own well-being in retirement. And so if you get a start as a teenager, it's unbelievable, you know, the boost that you get if you start early.
Yeah.
And you are doing your kids a huge service to introduce them, to not only start them on their long-term investment journey, but just to introduce all those concepts to them.
Without question. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.